the car man, he'll know what to do. Don't waste no more time, cause now you know, pick up the phone. It's the car man show. Who can?
You can.
Who can?
You can.
I can.
You can.
With who?
Car man.
Who can?
You can.
Who can?
You can.
I can.
You can.
With who?
Car man.
Who can?
You can.
Who can?
You can.
I can.
You can.
With who?
Car man.
Who can?
You can.
Who can?
You can.
I can.
You can.
Welcome to the second half of the Car Man Show. For all of you that have never heard of me, they call me the Car Man for one and only reason, and that's because I help people just like you make better car buying decisions. I've been doing these shows for such a long time, educating consumers on the ins and outs of purchasing cars. It's all about being a smart consumer. I've been doing radio since 1994. I've done radio shows all over the country, and there are people out here just like you that need help when it comes to purchasing cars. So definitely welcome to the show, and we're going to be covering today's topic, which is 10 questions that every woman needs to know the answer to. There are a lot of you out here that have, questions about your situation, and you really don't know what to do. You don't know what to do, and, you know, I wrote a book educating women about buying cars, and, you know, the whole idea of the book was to give women an opportunity to be able to get into something, as far as a car, without necessarily having the help of a man, because a lot of times women think that a man is going to be the one thing that's going to get them the best deal, and a lot of times that's not true. So definitely, I want to encourage each and every one of you to take advantage of that. So, you know, I want to get right into it. Definitely, if you've tuned in, we definitely welcome you to the show, and definitely we're going to try to give you as much information as we can over the next 30 minutes and see what we can do to help your overall situation. So the first thing that I want to talk about, the first question that I want to help answer is, why is a down payment needed so many times when buying a car? So let me say this. When you're looking to buy a car, banks don't approve the entire loan. So let me give you an example. If you're financing a car that's $20,000, the bank may say we'll finance only $15,000 of the $20,000. First of all, the banks know the car is not going to gain value, it's going to lose value. So the bank is only going to want to finance $15,000. So now the dealership may be able, through rebates, incentives, discounts, they may be able to reduce the cost of make up some of that difference of the $5,000 that the bank won't finance. And so what'll happen is that the bank will give the dealership $15,000. The dealership may be able to make up, let's say, $2,000 of the $5,000, but there's still $3,000 left. Well, ultimately what happens is that money has to come from somewhere. Now, sometimes the dealership will work with you and do everything they can to help you, but in other instances, the dealership may say, you know what, if you can't come up with the money, then we can't help you. And that's ultimately what happens a lot of times. And so I urge you that if you're out here, definitely down payment will always help you get a better deal when you're financing a car, because the banks very rarely do 100% financing. Down payment is definitely something that's going to help your deal go through. Here's another question that every woman needs to know. What what can you do to help your situation if you're upside down? What can you do Well, let me say this. Money will always help your situation. Money will always help your upside down situation. That's very almost similar to what I was just talking about. But if you have a car that you owe $5,000 on and is worth $10,000, the only way you're going to be able to trade out of that car is you're going to have to make up that difference of that money. So it's important for you to understand that if you're upside down and trying to buy a car, you're probably going to need some type of cash. You're probably going to need some type of cash, so you definitely want to take advantage of that. Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Car Man Show. They call me the Car Man for one and only reason, and that's because I help people just like you make better car buying decisions. I am always available for help wherever you're listening to me from the East Coast to the West to the South to the North. It doesn't matter. My direct number where you can reach me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the number is 877-870-4815. That's 877-870-4815. There are a lot of you out here that may need my help. And I say that if you're out here and you're listening, why would you not take the advice of somebody that's been in the industry versus rolling the dice and going into a dealership where the salesman gets a commission? The salesman gets a commission the salesman gets a commission of what is the profit on the show. And so it doesn't make sense for you, and I say this, it doesn't make sense for you to do that. It just doesn't make sense for you to do that. So what we like to do is whatever things we can do on this show and whatever information we can give you, we want to do it. We want to do it. We want to make sure that every one of you, we want to make sure that everybody that listens in on the Car Man Show, they take advantage of the information that we're giving. They take advantage of the information that they're giving. Now, here's another question that every woman needs to know. What should you look for when you're leasing a car? Great question, and here's a great answer. The number one thing that people need to look at when doing a lease is be very, very, and I put in capital letters, cautious about your mileage. The mileage is the number one thing that people get in trouble with. Mileage is the number one problem people have when they're trading, when they're getting ready to end their lease, because they miscalculate the mileage. So what happens is that if you have a mileage, let's say 24,000 miles for a lease that's 2 years, then you're going to have to drive 12,000 miles a year or 1,000 miles a month. But the payment is going to be low because you only got a 24,000 mile lease. But let's say the payment is too high, and so you say, let's say that the mileage is too high, the payment is good, but you drive 2,000 miles a year. Well, what's going to happen is at the end of that term, you may, when I say 2,000 miles a year, I mean 2,000 miles a month, you may have 24,000 miles at the end of the first year and still have another year left. I've had people call me for help on their car situation, and they have had $5,000 in excess mileage fees. $12,000 in excess mileage fees. Yes, $12,000. I had somebody that basically went 80,000 to 90,000 miles over what their miles were, and it's 25 cents a mile. So they had a hefty fee that they had to pay. And if you don't pay that, the bank is going to try to work out a payment plan with you on the lease if you can't pay it in full. And then it's going to show up on your record as still you having a car loan because you haven't completed everything. If you don't pay them if you don't pay them, then what they're going to do is going to show up on your record as a repossession, and then you're not going to be able to get a car at all. So that is the situation that you looked at. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Car Man Show. They call me the Car Man for one and only reason, and that's because I help people just like you make better car buying decisions. If you have a car question, you can definitely press the number 1 on your phone, and you will be able to ask the car question that you have. And that's what we're all about here on the Car Man Show. So here's another question that every woman needs to know. Here's the question: what is the difference between a voluntary and involuntary repossession? This is the basic difference. Nothing. There's absolutely nothing different from the bank side in a voluntary or involuntary repossession. Sometimes banks will tell you, well, it looks better on your credit report if you bring the car in. Well, that's to save them the money that it's going to cost to repossess the car. That's going to save them the money that it's going to cost to not only repossess the car, then store the car somewhere where they keep repossessed cars and go through all of that. That's going to be money. They don't want to have to go through that. And so it's easier for them to just say, hey, listen, why don't you just bring it to this location and you're fine. So, you know, it doesn't reflect any different on your credit report. So you need to understand that regardless of where your credit is, what your situation is, if you give a car back or they come and take it, it is going to be looked at in the same light. It's going to be looked at in the same light. So, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind. Here's another question. How many miles should I have before I trade in my car? How many miles should you have before you trade in your car? I tell people the magic number is 100,000 miles. Let me tell you why 100,000 miles. There's a few things that happens when you're looking at a 100,000-mile vehicle. One is that when the vehicle hits 100,000 miles, it becomes unfinanceable with a lot of banks. A lot of banks will not finance a car that has over 100,000 miles. So that means that eliminates some dealerships from even wanting to take your car in on trade because they know they can't resell it because they may not have the lenders to be able to deal with the mileage issue. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that typically when you have cars, because the banks know that a lot of them, because the dealerships know that a lot of banks won't finance cars, the dealerships are going to give you a lot less on your trade-in. So you're going to get a lot less on the trade-in. The banks are not going to finance the vehicle. It's just not a good situation. So I encourage you that if you have a car and you've had it for a while and you've been making your payments, turn around and get into something else that has a lot lower mileage. If you have a car that has 90,000 miles on it now, get out of it now before it hits 100. I mean, you could have 95,000 miles. Get out before it hits 100. The dealerships don't want that car to hit 100,000 miles because it's definitely going to affect the trade-in value. Now, speaking of 100,000-mile cars, a natural segue question is, should I buy a car with over 100,000 miles? If you're buying a car and it happens to have over 100,000 miles and you're at your local used car dealership, a couple things. One is that you want to make sure you test drive the car. I give people this example of how I check cars out personally. When I test drive a car, what I do is I do three things. One is I take the car on a test drive on the expressway. I take it where I'm driving 50, 60 miles per hour, you know, and I want to see, you know how the car rides at 60 miles per hour. I want to see how the car rides at 70 miles per hour. Once I see how that is, then what I do is I get off the expressway. I want to make sure there's no shaking, there's no smoke, there's no rough ride. And once it passes that test, then I'll get off. I'll put the car in park, go to a vacant lot, put the car in park, and see how it sounds after me pushing it. Then what I'll do is I'll cut on the heat or the vents to see if there's anything burning in the engine. If I don't get that, then I'm fine. Then what I'll do is in this vacant lot, I'll do a figure eight. The figure eight basically will allow me to be able to see if there's anything wrong with the steering, the rack and pinion, the ball joints, anything that involves the vehicle turning, I will be able to see. And you just make a basic figure eight. So those are the three things that I look at. And then most importantly, if you buy a car that has over 100,000 miles, you want to have a warranty. A warranty is important. The reason that the warranty is important is because you want to put the onus on the dealer. You want to put the onus on the dealer so that if you've had some credit problems, you want to be able to take the car back to them and say, hey, listen, I bought this car and it's not working. What can you do to fix it? That's what you want. And the warranty will afford you the opportunity to be able to do that. And if you do those couple things, that should make you feel semi-comfortable. But understand this, when you buy a used car, whether it has over 100,000 miles or whether it has 50,000 miles, used cars are used cars. You never know what you're going to get until you've had it for a while, and that's the unfortunate thing, but that's the reality of the situation. Here's another situation. Where should I take my car for service? And this is a good question for some of the women that are listening. Where should I take my car for service? If it's a new car, you always want to take it to a dealership. If you have a new car, if you bought a new Chevy, you can take it to any General Motors dealership in the country. So you could take it to a Buick dealer. You know, you could take it to a GMC dealer. You know, you could take it to a Cadillac dealer. You know, if you have a service issue and you need to have your car fixed and it's new, take it to the dealership because you're still going to probably have some warranty left. And on top of that, you're also going to be able to have certified mechanics that know how this vehicle runs from top to bottom to be able to take a look at it. Now, what if the car is used? If the car is used without a warranty, you're going to have to find a good mechanic. In finding a good mechanic, you're going to have to do some research. You're going to have to ask some questions. You're going to have to look at its prices. So it does take a little bit to do that, but I'm here to tell you that when you find a good mechanic, you stay with that good mechanic. Most people I know deal with the same guy for every one of their problems. One is you trust him. Two is that you kind of know what kind of price structure he charges, and more than likely he'll start to give you a break in price because of the relationship. If you have a used car that has a warranty on it, you're in a different ball game. Now, that's good because now you go right back to the dealership and say, hey, this $1,200 warranty I just purchased, I needed to help me get my car fixed. So even though those warranties don't cover everything, it's still good for you to have something that you can lay your hat on, and kind of go from there. So, again, extended warranties are important. Now, here's another question. Do you need an extended warranty? Do you need an extended warranty on a brand new car? On a used, late model used car. So let's say that you're looking at a car that, 2015, 2014, that still has some of the manufacturer's warranty left. So some of the warranties on these cars are 5 year, 50,000 miles. Where if you buy a car that has that type of warranty and it has 40,000 miles on it, you got 10,000 miles of warranty left. Well, you need to maximize that 10,000 miles of warranty left. So taking it in to the manufacturer dealer to get it fixed is important. Even if you have, if you bought the car used, you still, if it has the balance of the factory warranty, I tell people all the time, you need to milk that warranty as long as your car is covered, because the dealerships are going to do be as up to date as anybody on the latest situations with that particular problem, and then they're going to look at your situation and see exactly what can be done to solve it. So that's important. Here's another thing. We've got three more things before we go off the air. If you have a car question, you can press the number 1 on your phone, and I will be glad to answer your car question. Here's a question. How do lenders look at bankruptcy? Well, first of all, there's a law that everybody needs to know that if you are in a bankruptcy, a Chapter 13, which is when you're paying on a payment plan and you're paying back all your creditors, well, if you are on a payment plan with the bankruptcy courts, the only way that you can get a car is it has to be approved through the trustee. It has to be approved through the courts. If you do not have approval through the courts, nobody can legally sell you a car because you're legally in a bankruptcy. Now, it's important to understand that is the way it is everywhere. That's the way it is everywhere. The courts protect you, but they protect you also from going out and buying another vehicle. Now, if the courts say, yes, Ms. Jones, Mr. Smith, whoever, we will approve you to get a car. So typically they'll give them a payment range that they need to be at. So now they've got to go around and search and find these different dealerships that are willing to work with them. Well, ultimately what happens is that they may find a dealership that has a car. Some of the dealerships are not going to want to deal with waiting to transact the deal. And what I mean by that is that if you're in a bankruptcy, once you find the car, you're going to have to get the bill of sale from the dealership, which is going to have all of the terms and everything on there. Then you're going to have to turn around and take that back to your attorney, who in turn is going to have to put that before the trustee to see if they would even approve you for a vehicle. And if they would, what would the parameters be? They may come back and say, no, we wouldn't, we want her to finish the bankruptcy. They may also say, yes, but we don't want her to go over a $300 payment. Well, that $300 payment is going to have to fit in this scenario. So it is important to understand that bankruptcy is a real tricky situation. You hear a lot of places that say, hey, we've got this bankruptcy program. And that bankruptcy program is only for people that have bankruptcies that are discharged. Your bankruptcy has to be discharged. It doesn't mean that you went to the court and, they did what they did. It means that you actually have discharge papers that basically say, yes, I am done. When you have that, it opens up the financial doors for you to get a loan, because these banks will be willing to give you a loan in that scenario. So, again, that is important. Bankruptcies always need to be discharged. If you don't have them, discharged, it's nothing that nobody is going to be able to do. Okay, so we got about 4 minutes left, and here's the last question. How long does it take to get approved for a loan? I tell people, honestly, you're looking between 24 and, well, let me back up. I would say on average is between 24 and 48 hours. Now, sometimes people can walk into the dealership at 9:00 in the morning, and then by the time the transaction is done, they can be done. They walk in at 9:00, they could be in their new car by 11 or 12. The situation is that loan got approved fast. either the dealership wasn't busy or either the person had some workable credit or whatever. In other instances, it may take 2-3 days. And the reason why is because what happens is the bank will basically say, yeah, we'll finance this person, but these are the parameters that we need. And so now the dealership is going back and forth with this lender because of the credit or because of the car situation or whatever. So it may take time to transact that deal. Typically, is going to take I would say, probably no more than 24 hours. You know, typically, you know, sometimes in extreme situations it can be longer, but as a whole, I don't think anything longer than 24 hours. So you will definitely be able to get into a loan within a very reasonable period of time. So, well, listen, we only got 3 minutes left. I definitely want to appreciate each and every one of you that has tuned in to this Carman show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Definitely want to give a shout-out to all of the listeners that listen to me in Detroit on Praise 102.7 FM, or the people that listen to me, and that show is at 9 o'clock on Saturday mornings Eastern time. Or if you wanted to listen to my, I want to thank my Las Vegas listeners who I have a show that comes on every Friday from 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. and that's on Vegas local time. So definitely I want to appreciate everybody that has tuned in to the show. Don't forget that you will have an opportunity to reach me immediately following this show. So whenever you listen to it, whether you're listening to it live or whether you listen to it later, we have a 24-hour hotline, 877-870-4815. That's 877-870-4815. We are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And anybody over the entire country, I will work with you in your particular situation. So, again, the toll-free number where I can be reached is 877-870-4815. That's 877-870-4815. Give me a call, and let's see what we can do to help your situation. Listen, I've been doing these shows for a long time, and I always am appreciative of all the people that tune into the show. My website, if you want to find out more information about me and my show and see some pictures and videos of satisfied customers, you can go to my website. The website address is thecarmanshow.com. That's thecarmanshow.com, and we can help you and do what we can do. But listen, I got to go. Here's the number where you can reach me after the show, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 877-870-4815. Thank you, and as always, remember, you can with Carman.